Hi everyone and welcome to this week's RTE Rugby podcast. This week, as part of our collaboration with the final chapter of 20 by 20, we're dedicating our soccer, rugby and GAA podcast to the women's game. The soccer podcast is already out. You can listen to it wherever you get your podcasts, and the GAA one will be out tomorrow. The hashtag for the final chapter is Think It, Ask It. So today we're asking the questions about the current landscape of women's rugby, and we're going to do so today in the company of Irish international Cliona Maloney, former Irish international, now rugby coach and RTE analyst Fiona Steed, and Sue Carty of the IRFU, who's also a representative of the World Rugby Council. And I suppose, Sue, with that in mind, let's ask you first about what the global picture looks like and how Ireland is comparing when you're looking at things right now. What does the picture of the women's game look like for you?
Yeah, great, Jackie, and thanks for having me on. Great to be here with you today. So, yeah, like when we look now and compare in a short number of years, I know, like previously I worked with World Rugby, and back then in, 2009, the women and girls game, we were at 4% of the global playing population, with really very little in place in terms of opportunity and competition. Over that initial period of time, it was really about growing the game and growing the opportunity, increasing participation. And we're up now at over 25% of the global participation, which is really great. And the whole profile, it's much more visible. We have a competition structure around sevens. We're in the Olympic Games. We have the World Series. And I think crucial then is around the competition structure around 15s. And that's something that's really been worked on quite closely over the last number of months. And what's been committed to now is an international competition structure for women's 15s that will be rolled out after the next World Cup. So I think what we're seeing is the opportunity to play the game has certainly opened up significantly. A lot more countries getting involved and seeing the opportunity, like not just the need. I mean, I think we've moved away from it being, the right thing to do. It also being like there's a huge opportunity for the whole game here to engage women and girls and what they bring to the table and what they bring to the game. So the increase in that participation across the whole game, and then the competition structure. And when you look at the coverage of that, and when you look at the quality and the standard of the overall international game, has certainly increased and grown. So I think we've significant building blocks and pillars in place now, where we're really in a position to kick on.
Fiona, you'll have seen that as well over your time. Obviously, when you're playing, things are obviously quite different, but you have young daughters now as well. You're taking them out, and that participation piece, I know you're seeing it as a coach as well, that at grassroots level has been an enormous positive.
Yeah, it has. I mean, I think, sport and women in sport and girls in sport is continuing to grow, and it's really important that we highlight that and that we continue to highlight the need for it to grow across all the stratospheres of it, up to and including governance. So on the grassroots level, absolutely, there are more and more girls playing rugby now. We nearly have 3,000 youth players, I think, as of the end of last year in Ireland, which is fantastic. And it's how we grow and sustain that. And I mean, there's just a lot of work we've done on the ground by the development officers in each province, houses women's development officers, and then their community development officers as well outside of that, which is great. And then it's the individual clubs, I think, are beginning to see the benefit of having girls playing, and I suppose I can talk a lot about Brough, which is where I'm coaching and where our kids are playing, our three kids, so Sally, Roisin and Bill. That the structures have been in place there to allow girls to have, I suppose, equal share of the pitches, of the facilities, and all of that has been huge. And I think when clubs are prepared to do that, then it makes it much more appetizing for young girls to come. And whether the pathway is that they start, as often in Brough, they start with with the boys up to, they can play up to their 12, and then they move over. And we have some girls that come, at 10, and we have an under 10s all the way up to under 18s girls teams. So that's huge, and that's been phenomenal. I mean, it wouldn't have been there 5 years ago, and it wouldn't have been there, certainly wasn't there in my time that the girls were even like looked at playing rugby. So it's been huge and loads done, and it's still loads to do, but I think on the ground it's hugely positive, you know, at the moment.
And Cliona, I think that's exactly it. It's the loads done, and you guys as current internationals, of course, you stand on the shoulders of those who went before you. That goes without saying, but it's the much done, but so much more to do. Is that kind of the way that you feel about it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, my exposure to rugby came quite late. I think I was after finishing university in Sligo, and while there was a rugby team there, it wasn't something that I got, approached to do or even thought about, because it never even entered my mindset, because I didn't grow up with rugby. There was no rugby in my school. It wasn't even on my radar. I watched the men's team, but that was really it. And I was a Gaelic footballer. There was nothing to say that I couldn't have played rugby when I was younger had it been available. And that's probably something that I regret. But then, like, on the other side of that, you have my experience with rugby since I have joined. So from there, I would have joined Railway Union. And I know people kind of laugh. A lot of people probably don't really like Railway that much because of, they probably quite aggressively recruit players and they quite aggressively market it. But you know what, you have to say that they are doing something different. And I think they've been quite successful in doing that. And if it hadn't have been for that, you know, aggressively approaching players or whatever way you want to say is trying to take players from the GAA, I think we've benefited from that. Like, I mean, I wouldn't be playing rugby if it wasn't for them. Lindsay Peace certainly wouldn't. She would have retired long ago, I think, if they hadn't coaxed her out of it. So, you know, I mean, it is something different, and it's probably something that people look on and say, oh, well, they're doing whatever the hell they want, but they are, and it's getting them a little bit of success, and it's adding another dimension to women's rugby in Ireland. And it's good to have differences, obviously, right throughout the league. I mean, you will always have the backbone of Irish rugby, which was always Highfield, ULBOs, your Blackrocks, your Belvos, and they're the older clubs that have a lot of tradition and a lot of history with them. But I think as things move on and as the game develops and as we need to bring in more and more young players from all walks of life, from every kind of background, I think we will probably see more clubs like Railway developing. And it's just a different avenue, isn't it? I mean, we can't only recruit one way if we're going to hope to have a vast majority of young girls playing rugby. We've got to recruit in many ways. And I was quite lucky with my experience to that, because I don't think I would be playing rugby otherwise. And then again, I've been quite lucky in my experience coming over to the UK. It's quite an unusual thing to be coached by two female coaches, which I am at the minute, in Giselle Mather and LJ Lewis. So that's unique in itself. And then also similarly, I mean, playing with Wasps, we are based here in West London. So while we're affiliated with the men's club in Coventry, we don't necessarily have to fight for facilities or pitch space. We are the top team in the club, in the amateur club in London. So, you know, we get rights to pitches, we get rights to the gym, we get access to whatever we want, because our coaches drive that, and they need to have that for their top team. So I have seen both sides of it, but having said that, I know I am quite lucky where I have ended up playing rugby. But I do recognise the need for kind of diversity and inclusion in even in the recruitment process itself, because we need all walks of life to play rugby and to have access to it.
And I think because it's such a young sport, Cliona, in comparison to ladies getting football, camogie, you know, soccer, some of these sports that have just been around for longer, that is inevitable. And I don't actually think there's anything wrong with that, because I think that's to the benefit of rugby. Like you mentioned at Railway, you know, Aoife McDermott, there's other, like, obviously cross-coders, like a lot of the hockey girls, you know, that went on to even play sevens, some of the basketball girls. There's actually nothing wrong with that, because if rugby is going to develop as a sport, there's things that they can learn from basketball and camogie and ladies football and all of those as well, and surely this is a good thing for Irish rugby.
100%. And I actually have looked on with probably in the last couple of years in general. So I would have joined in 2014. I guess if you were to look at from 2014 to 2020 now, how many girls or women who are potentially playing Gaelic football have gotten poached by AFL clubs or have gone to play AFL. And their potential losses to the Irish rugby team, they really are. I mean, there's exceptional athletes pursuing, you know, their ability and professional experiences playing sport that have gone to Australia that we've probably lost out. Like any number of them could have been rugby players at any level. But I think that's kind of something that we've lacked in the last couple of years, where rugby would have been the next venture for you know, someone that showed talent in that kind of way, maybe slightly more aggressive, maybe really good football skills. They've all seemed to have gravitated towards that as opposed to rugby, and that's a loss really to Irish rugby, in my opinion.
So I was just going to come in and agree with a lot of what Tina had said there, and certainly I'm coaching under 16s now at the moment, and they're all playing other sports, you know, they're playing camogie, they're playing basketball and soccer and Gaelic football down in Limerick. And I suppose my philosophy with them, and especially at the start of the season, like we did a survey and said, okay, what other sports are you playing on what nights? And because we're only starting off the season now, you know, we've said to them, absolutely, we'll try and facilitate you. For young girls as well, you know, they'll eventually find their path, and you can't force them one way or the other. What you can do is encourage them. And it's just really important fundamentally for me that girls are playing sport. I think that's the biggest piece, and eventually, hopefully, you know, I played camogie at county level, so you know, it was only because I went to the UK that I started the rugby. So you know, eventually your heart will find your sport. So what we do is at the moment we say, look, this is the night we're preferring training. If you can make it this night, as opposed to we train twice a week, you know, we know you have your other sports on this and this, so let's try and have the rugby night. If you can come, like last night we did a skills session with the girls that were there, so that they were still developing their individual skills, and then we do team nights. So it's all about that. It's encouraging the girls to play at a really, really early stage, because they will specialise eventually, and there's absolutely no harm in having the camogie players and the footballers and the soccer players and basketballers, because it makes them much better sports people at the end. So exactly what Tina is saying. And the only thing for us at a younger age is to make sure that, you know, they have rest periods and that they're not overtraining, especially at this really, really crucial sort of 14 to 18 age, and that they keep interested. So I certainly see it as a huge, huge plus, and that we shouldn't compete with other sports. I can't say that the GAA are as good to us, and I'm going coaching camogie after this now, this evening, so I can't say that they're as good with letting people do other sports, but we certainly, you know, look to that as being favourable that they do other things, and we try and work with it, because in the muck and dirt of the winter, you know, there is the one sport that will predominate, which will be rugby.
Yeah,
because
I was going to say, Sue, on the point that Cliona is making there, one thing that I do think about the Australian model that Cliona has mentioned that I think is key there is it's the chance to become a professional athlete. And that's what the problem is here, because you look at the men's structures and there's lots of opportunities for young boys to become a professional rugby player in this country, whereas that isn't the sense. If you want to stay in Ireland, you can go and do what Cliona has done or what Lauren Delaney has done, you know, and actually make a life for yourself in England. But maybe that's a key here, Sue, that like how close are we going to get it that there is going to be an opportunity for a young girl to be a professional rugby player in this country?
Yeah, well, I think like so, similar to what Fiona said, I think it's really important that girls get the opportunity to play sport. And, you know, what they choose to play isn't the biggest thing. And certainly when I got involved specifically with the RFU this time, couple of years ago, it's like I'm really clear every girl in the country has the opportunity to play rugby. Whether they choose to play or not is entirely up to them, but they have the opportunity to play. And you know, a couple of years ago that certainly wasn't the case. We're much closer to that now. Like out of our 217 odd clubs, we have 156 that offer some form of the female game, and that's growing and it's building. And no question, there's a lot more to do. And in given the opportunity to play, the commitment then has to be to support them reach their potential in whatever that is, right up to the representation level. And I think the thing for us was, well, there's a lot to do. Where do you start? And when you're introducing that change and that whole change management piece, you don't get to do everything in one go. And part of the thing is making some tough decisions. So where do you put your resources in? Where do you focus your time? Where do you focus your energy? And some of the things we have done around that participation is make it available. The Give It a Try has been a huge success. Over 90 clubs signed up to that this year. Now, unfortunately, COVID has had an impact on that, and over 50 have rolled out that so far, and others planned. We've revamped the All-Ireland League, and Cliona alluded to how important that is and that that really is, and a sponsor as part of that for the very first time. But the other piece that's happening as part of that is the support the coaches are getting. And IRFU analysts are provided work on those games to support that now as well. So there's a real piece really beginning to develop further around that partnership and that working together across the development and the high performance piece. And a huge step was the High Performance Centre, and now the women's teams, the 7s and 15s, are both based there and provided with the experts that, you know, they need and deserve. Like, at the end of the day, we're all really mindful, like Kleena and the girls, they're the ones that really, you know, they put their time, their bodies on the line, like out there, and really give it everything. So we need to ensure that we put everything, or you know, around them we can to support that. So that's like there's a lot around that developed and delivered. And like as Fiona said earlier, there's so much more to do, no question.
Yeah, and it's a big jigsaw as well, Sue. And I think a lot of people understand that. But as you said there rightly, there are decisions to be made. And a part of that is prioritising the key things here. And obviously, the Sevens was such a big model here. It's an Olympic sport. There's funding there to be gotten. And I do think anybody watching on from the outside could understand why there was a lot being put into it. But, you know, as it all evolves, there must be a difficulty from your point of view where you're trying to manage a fully professional setup in the Sevens, where you're trying to get the absolute most out of that, but you're also trying to match it with the ambitions of a 15s team that needs all those resources as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like steps have really been taken to match that, like the number of camps and all of that now in place for the 15s, also being in the High Performance Centre. And look, this is where COVID had a swipe at us as well. I mean, the national women's team were to have their first summer tour this year. And that was all in place and planned. And they were to have top level matches in preparation for the World Cup qualification. So, you know, there were a lot of other steps that we just, you know, COVID got in the way. So all of those things are being put in place and are being moved forward. And I think the other significant step this year has been the under-18s. So that's being built. We've had the under-18 sevens. We've development squads with under-18s. That's been rolled out at provincial level. And we now have a national under-18 squad. So I think it's like building the structures so that we've something solid and sustainable, but then also, you know, have the sandwich meat, you know, under-18s, leading them right into the national squad, giving them the support they need and deserve. And then right into, as you say, the national 15s team. And you're right, it doesn't all happen in a minute, but there are key things we need to put in place so that we can confidently and sustainably build on that. And then overlying that, you know, now that the game is becoming much more accessible to girls, we can now really reach them and communicate to them. So I'm really excited about our marketing bespoke program that's going to be rolled out in the next couple of months that will really speak to and engage those girls and move the whole thing forward.
And look, all of it is about moving things forward. I think for you guys though, Kleena, when you're looking at, you're involved in it right now, you've got Six Nations games coming up right now. You're going to be playing against a professional setup in France and an Italian team where there are real strides being made. So for you guys as players, can you take in the big picture as well? Or is it that you're so focused on what's in front of you right now that you just have to let all that kind of happen in the background?
No, I think we can. And there is quite a lot of us that do understand all of the things that have happened before and all the things that need to happen going forward in order for it to become more professional. There's quite a lot of us now that have been involved for a few years that understand there are progresses being, like, there progress is happening. We do have more camps. Obviously, the facilities in HPC, in the High Performance Centre in Abbottstown, are fantastic. And it is wonderful to have that access. We do know about the tour as well. Obviously, that was a huge disappointment that we couldn't go this summer and have our first summer tour and really like work together for a couple of weeks, because we don't really get that opportunity ever. Obviously, people are all over the country and there's a couple of us here in England. We only ever get together for 2 or 3 days, 2 days for a weekend and 3 or 4 days for a match day camp. So it would be invaluable for us to have those couple of weeks together, because the only time we ever get that is when we're in a World Cup. And at that point, you know, it's probably, as it was last time, a little bit too late. So we do understand the big picture, and I think it's just about driving it forward. I mean, unfortunately, right now, the only thing I felt I could do was come to England and try my best, try and get as close as I could to a professional setup. I'm not paid to play rugby over here. I know a lot of people think we are, but we're not. It is moving on a little bit. You know, certain clubs pay match fees, stuff like that. But even then, there's that double-edged sword of, well, we're not actually available for a lot of matches here. So even if you were to be offered match fees by a club, you're in camps most weekends, because that's when we train with our national team. So the only thing we can do at the minute is keep our head down, keep training, keep pushing to qualify for that World Cup, and hopefully things will change sooner rather than later. It's all really about investment at the end of the day, and kind of aligning the resources. So I'm not sure what that means for the women's team. It's great to be training in the same place as the men right now, and that has definitely helped the access to those facilities. I don't think I've ever had anything like that before, be it in England or at home. But yeah, I guess most people probably feel that the same way. They understand the bigger picture, but if people, you know, who have the opportunity, like myself or Adele McMahon or Claire Malloy, who are living over here, if we can get as close to it as we possibly can, we do. So we work, say, 2-3 days a week, and we just balance that over the 5 days and train as much as we can. It's even probably more difficult when you kind of, we're all quite close with the English girls, particularly here in Wasps. And my girlfriend actually plays for England, and she's a full-time contracted rugby player. So to see, you know, the time that she has to rest and recover and repair, when I'm sitting in the corner on my laptop trying to get some work done or heading off into the office for the day, that's quite difficult. And I really do get to see both sides of, you know, what is available when all of your time is dedicated to your sport. But at the same time, you know, I'm very glad that I have what I have, and that I can train as much as I possibly can. My job are very flexible here. You know, if a meeting does crop up, I can always just push it out to the next day and make the session, and I just find a way to get it done. Same with the other girls who are in Wasps. So there is a way around it, and we do, obviously we understand that, you know, things will move on, but at the minute they're moving probably a little bit too slowly for us, but we're always going to be eager. So
yeah, and look, it's hard to see the wood for the trees when you're in the middle of it as well, but for you it is a life decision as well, because, like, as you say, you're not getting paid, but you are getting the supports that maybe weren't available in Ireland. You know, that maybe you are learning over there. And as you say, you're looking at it on a daily basis. You're seeing what the English girls are getting. And like, some of this is aspirational, but some of it is learning, where you're actually embedded within the culture. You're coming home, and that knowledge share that you're bringing to Ireland is incredibly valuable to our national team as well.
100%, yeah. And I wouldn't be naive in saying that coming to England 100% has changed me as a player. It's made me a lot better, and I know that. And it's simply having access to a rugby ball 5 days a week. I'm doing skill sessions and training with people who are of a much higher quality than I was when I came over here. And it has made me better, and it always will make someone better. The more you can have your hands on a rugby ball, that's the be-all and end-all. Obviously, the gym sessions, the S&C, everything else adds in on top of that, and that, you know, that's the padding around the body of the good rugby player, I suppose. But 100%, it is just having your hands on a rugby ball and being coached by good quality coaches, playing with better quality players, being challenged on a daily basis, you know, not being the big fish in the small pond and being able to get away with murder, because sometimes you can do that. You don't really get away with anything over here. So that is good, and that's made all the difference, I think.
Fiona, you obviously experienced this on both sides of the ball as well, coming over to England and seeing what it was like, you know, away from Ireland as well, and how they treat high performance. What have you kind of learned over the years, and what do you think the next steps are for Ireland based on what you've kind of seen?
Yeah, so I suppose I started my rugby career in England, you know, that's where I started playing. There was no camogie up in the northeast of England, so That's what took me to rugby. And I suppose at the time, now I'm back 20 years, okay, 20 years this month, actually. So it's a long journey. But I suppose the setup, and when we played the likes of, you know, for Novocastrians, we played the likes of Wasps and Richmond and Saris in the Premiership. Like, it's huge. You're playing with and against, you know, the best players, like Cliona said. So that hasn't changed. I mean, I worked full-time and train. So it's not quite as good a setup as what Tina has. Coming back over, I made the decision to come back over in 2000 because it was nigh on impossible to travel the over and back the previous year. The 99 season, I had been over 11 out of 16 weekends to train or play. So that was a decision. I was playing for Munster at the time as well, travelling over. So it was a decision I made. Now it worked out quite good. You know, I really enjoy my life and being back here. But then when you come back, I suppose you bring pieces of that with you, you know, and you know that you bring, I suppose, your own standards back to Munster at the time, and I played with Shannon and that. But we've evolved a lot since then. And listening to Cliona, I mean, like, I'd love to be 20 years younger again and doing that piece, but doing it in Ireland. And I think we need to really look at the way that we set up our AIL and we set up our interpros in order for us to have some facility. And I don't mean facility in terms of actual structure of, you know, place, and we don't need a high performance piece in each academy, but we need the facilities around the girls. So that is coaching, okay? That is having the right group, the right squads together, and it is having the SNC, and it is having all of those support structures around it. And again, to be fair, there has been some you know, some huge inroads made in that, and the revamped AIL was supposed to help deliver that, okay? But obviously COVID has, you know, has got its piece into that as well, with regard to now they're provincial based, and that's really a challenge for Connacht as well this year, you know, because with Galwegians being, I suppose, their AIL team as such, you know, that's going to be a challenge for them. In Munster, obviously, we have, you know, UL Bodes, and now we have Ballincollig, as that was their first season in AIL. Whereas in Leinster, they have, obviously, they have Railway and all of the other ones that will have competitive games against each other in this community shield piece. And in Ulster, it's a similar sort of setup with their two AIL teams. So we need the AIL to be back in action in some form so that the best players are getting to play with and against each other every week. Now that, as I say, was about to be set up, and it was really encouraging what they were doing with regard to the AIL. The piece then behind it is the coaching and supporting the coaching, so that, like, Tina's saying, that, you know, unique situation to have Giselle there and to be coached by females. So, like, in Munster last year, we had an all-female coaching and set up for both the seniors and the under-18s. Now it had changed this year. I mean, myself and Sarah Jane Belton coached Munster in 8, 9, 7, 8 and 9, I think, as well. So it's not unique that you can't have female coaches at the top of their game, but it's putting that support structures in around it. So I think it's great if you have female coaches that are absolutely at the top of the game, but it's also equally good that it's male coaches coaching females if they're the right people for the job. So coaching is a priority. The IRFU, and I know just locally here in Munster, they're doing a lot to support coaches, even in this time. You know, the amount of webinars that I have recorded to go back in and just to refresh on all of the key skills and the cornerstones of coaching. So that's sort of there, but it's really, really key that we have correct coaching and the other pieces that go around it. For me, I've always been like this, that our interpros should be our marquee. You know, should be our marquee piece. And I know that I think Sue can correct me. I think Vodafone had come in to sponsor that this year. And again, COVID had gone on. But that's where you get your absolute collection of quality players playing against each other. And it had expanded last year. And my wish would be that it would be expanded again, and that it would trickle down from the interpros, from the seniors. So like that in Munster, we have a development side. I know Leinster are very, very similar and, you know, ahead of the game in terms of the senior setup. They're doing really, really well. But in Munster, we had the under-18s last year who won the Interpros. And we have then regional development structures outside of that. So for Munster, we have under-17 set up in like sort of north, south and east and west, or just west. I'm not quite sure of the exact geography of it. That needs to happen. But again, coaching is key. So there needs to be the correct coaches in place to do that. And there needs to be a pathway. So I suppose you need a pathway all the way through from the girl that picks up the ball at 7 or 8 years of age to go out and play with her brothers or her sisters or her friends, all the way through then, that she can see that there's a full pathway, full line of sight as to when she starts playing, that if she wants to play for Munster, she'll know the steps that have to be taken. And Tina mentioned, you know, Railway being unique in the way that they set things up. And that is absolutely one way of recruiting players and, you know, taking them from other sports and focusing on the adult game. And we can't all do that. We have to support the grassroots, and we have to look at that avenue as well of growing our own. So it's a, you know, combined way of doing it. And then I think, you know, I still feel for the girls nationally. I think we could still do more there. Again, COVID, yes, has stepped in, but we can't use COVID as an excuse for everything as well. So we need to make sure that the provinces and that the, I suppose, that the high performance setup receive their allocation of funding, you know, to allow them to do this piece, to make sure that they have proper physio and proper SC, which, you know, I think is in place. So that just needs to be maintained. Like, you still wish that Tina was here in Ireland playing, and that people didn't feel the need, and, you know, it can be lifestyle or it can be whatever, to go over there. Wouldn't it be great if we got to the stage where people and girls, women here, could be in a situation where they can work 3 days a week and train 4 days a week, or something similar. I don't see us, I have to say, ever going fully professional here. I just don't see it happening. And
why not?
Right now, I think if you look at how we are, you know, the financial crisis of sport in general, and, you know, rugby in particular, as mentioned a couple of weeks ago, you know, when Philip Brown was discussing with the, you know, with the Dáil COVID committee and the impact of sport and the impact of COVID on sport, I don't think the funds will be there. And I think the female game and the women's game, you know, we have to be able to sell ourselves too, in terms of that it's a game that you want to play, it's a game that's worth watching, and that we sell out grounds. At the moment, we can't sell out grounds to build our fan base. And I think the women's team in recent years have done absolutely fantastic job of that. I mean, I was in Ashbourne for the, you know, the heady days of the beating the England and France and all of that, and fantastic, and it's grown and grown. But we need to keep at that, so that we are able to fulfill our own prophecy in terms of, you know, the whole 20 by 20 thing is how many people will go to see a women's match over a men's match? What's, you know, who's going to choose that? Like, who can put their hands up and say, well, I went to support a women's match rather than watching the men's match on telly, you know? Or,
but surely,
like,
part of that question, though, Fiona, is not that it's either or. People can do both. And some of the structures are about us saying, let's not put them on at the same time, or let's all try to work together here.
100%. And some of the scheduling for the Six Nations, I suppose, here to date, and even again, you know, the new ones are 1 o'clock on a Sunday. They're clashing with each other, but hopefully won't clash with men's fixtures, you know. So it is a huge, it's like Sue was saying as well, I think you mentioned it, it's a huge puzzle. But marketing of the, I suppose, the women's Six Nations, does it need to come out of Six Nations? Will that be affected by the new proposed global calendar that, you know, Sue has mentioned, but not mentioned because I suppose it's still in the stages? We just need to look at ourselves as an identity in itself, and not compare ourselves to the men's game. You know, that it is different, it is rugby, but where do we push us into society? There's so much left unanswered, if you know what I mean. And you're right, so that people don't have to make a choice. But also, women need to still support women better, you know, and men need to support women better. And that's still a piece, you know. And I could talk forever on this and probably round in a circle.
I know. And look, and I think all that's fair, Sue, as well. Like, I don't think Fiona's saying anything there that any of us can disagree with, to be fair.
Oh, not at all. I think, like, it's, you know, clearly it's, there's structures now being put in place, and a lot that we've achieved and we need to build on, and like, what is the aspiration from here? And I think it is worthwhile to bring back in the international piece in that. So we do need a global international competition structure to give us, like, what are we stepping into? You know, it's like, it's all fine and well to talk about, well, we should go professional and all of that. But to do what? Like, what competition? What is the competition structure? And that's all clear in the men's game. And Fiona's 100% right when she said, I fully agree that, you know, we don't just go along and copy the men's game. We want to create what really works for women's. And some of that will, you know, mirror and has and will do the men's game. And some of it won't and shouldn't. And sometimes, you know, we're at risk of shooting ourselves in the foot to, you know, to copy the men's game because we should have that because the men do it. So the plan from a World Rugby perspective with the competition piece is to roll out the new international competition structure in 2 years' time. So there's a 2-year lead in for participating unions and all of that to get their houses in order and to move the thing forward. And I think that will make a big difference for all of us when that detail is right. The other thing that's happening is the Six Nations are doing their own piece of work, you know, with the six unions around the Women's Six Nations. There's a new committee in place there that was recently put in place to roll out that strategy. And for us, Mary Quinn is there with Anthony Eddy. And they've actually just come out and talked, I even think this morning, around getting that marketing piece right and, you know, getting the partnership around the Women's Six Nations right. The timing and all of that is being looked at. And like some of the challenges in the background, which I totally appreciate people couldn't, you know, you wouldn't be in a position to see, but it's when you have the organization running the whole competition that can put those pieces together where you can really work to avoid the overlaps and everything else that don't work. That can now be more effectively addressed now that they have that structured committee in place, that they have a strategy in place to deliver on. So, you know, a lot of these things are works in progress. And I know I'm terribly impatient. I want it all now. But some of it does take that bit of time to get the ducks in a row and to move it in a way that we get it right. So I think those two elements around us in what we're doing within the IRFU will really help a lot. And then it's not getting complacent. Like, it's great that we've moved things forward so well. And I think we've got really great people involved. And like, you look at the setup across our branches, we've got committees in place and really great people. Like, Fiona's on the Munster committee. We have a new female president in Connacht, like Anne, for the very first time. But we can't afford to get complacent. We need to really, you know, a bit like on the pitch, stay on our toes and really keep driving the thing forward. Like, we've engaged in a way and we've brought people on board with us. We've inspired people with what the women can bring to the game and the joy it creates to get behind the women's game. And really now it's to just go for that and not sit on our laurels. And inside that, we've challenges to embrace. But, you know, as was said earlier, COVID isn't an excuse. It's something we need to step into and embrace. And there will be opportunities that open up inside of these challenges as well, and it's important we take them.
And look, strong voices are going to be key to this, Cliona, and one of the things obviously we saw recently with the Canterbury jersey hiccup, if we want to call it that, being polite about it, you know, things like this being called out, whereas I would have noticed before, and obviously I'd be friendly with lots of different players who were involved in some of these squads who might have been afraid before to say something and might not have stood up. The one thing that I was taken with, Cliona, was the amount of you who spoke out against this immediately and said, this is not good enough. I mean, for people who didn't see it, by the way, it was basically a Canterbury jersey launch of the new Irish jersey. There was three Irish men's players used and a female model used to model the women's kit. And like, I know, Cliona, obviously you were speaking out about it as well, but the amount of you who immediately said, this is just not good enough anymore, was really strengthening, I think.
Yeah, I didn't really think of it that way. I think retrospectively I did, because maybe a few people got in touch with me to say that maybe I should be careful about what I do or don't say. I didn't see it that way, and whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. As in, I wasn't afraid to say what I thought. That would be me anyway. I usually bite my hand off, spite my face straight away. So, I don't know. I mean, I just felt it was wrong. I was delighted that we were aligned with the men's jersey. I was delighted that we'd finally gotten the appropriate crest on the jersey. And obviously that was a lot of work in itself, but I just didn't understand why it had happened. And I did speak out about it, and I wouldn't change a thing, to be honest. I would do it again tomorrow. And thankfully things have, you know, moved along in that space. I think Canterbury did backtrack and have launched a rebranding, I suppose, and a women's kind of section to their website and to their marketing, that kind of stuff. So, you know, it does work sometimes, but it's disappointing that it has to happen in that way. It's disappointing that you have to dismantle a brand on social media in order to get anyone to do the right thing in the first place. But yeah, I know what you mean about people being afraid to speak out, but I mean, I think that time is gone too. I think it's too big of an issue. It's too big of a thing to not talk about it anymore.
Because we've moved on, Fiona, haven't we? I mean, look, you've obviously come through this in the past.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, I mean, I suppose we were at the stage where, you know, having jerseys was a bonus, and, you know, making sure they were washed and stuff at times. But when I saw that, I suppose, advert, first of all, I liked it, and I thought, oh, this is great, because it was the women's kit. Okay, so it was the girls' jersey, and it was their, you know, their sponsor on it and everything else. Not thinking for a second, oh, that's a model, because I the way sometimes you like something and retweet it without actually having a full read. And then when I saw that, because I thought, oh, it could have been one of the girls done up or anything like that. And then, so it's come full circle. And now inside my head, I'm like, and this is a question for society. Do I buy the women's version? Okay, I feel I need an Ireland jersey. I haven't ever bought an Ireland jersey. And my initial thoughts were, I want to buy the Ireland women's jersey, not the Ireland men's jersey. Okay, so, but now, do I buy the Ireland women's jersey, even though I'm so cross with the way Canterbury launched it? Okay, so now I'm in that huge position of, I really want to wear the women's jersey. I support Ireland, I support Ireland men, women, whatever, but I would never go out and buy a men's jersey, okay? But I actually want to buy the women's jersey. But now I'm caught in the, should I do this? Because it's supporting the women, but then it's also supporting Canterbury. So that was one thing that was in my head. And then the other piece was like, that was bad, that was really terrible. And then you look at what we did in Munster, and we had it done ever before, the Canterbury piece in with Adidas, where they had approached Wendy Keenan, who's the chair of our women's committee, around having girls or women available for the launch. This was ever before the Canterbury fiasco, and we had identified our three young up-and-coming stars who were available and who did it all in the summer ever before. And that was like, that was really, really good. But they still, the editors are working on the women's fit, you know? So could they all get it right together at the, you know, so that it's the whole piece. But then you ask, how many people will go and buy the women's jersey, or will they just want the men's jersey because of, you know, the sponsor and associated with the men? So that's the bigger picture piece again, is how many of us, and that's the question to ask. And you know, you're talking about the 20 by 20 campaign and what's next and what question do you ask? So I'm asking, who will buy the women's jersey with the women's sponsor on, you know, whether they're a man or woman, over who will buy the men's jersey? And that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, you look, you definitely pose an interesting question there, Fiona, because I think morally people are, you know, people were outraged, rightly so. And like, I mean, it was only recently, I kept it when the Republic of Ireland Women made a stand in Liberty Hall 3 years ago about their issues. I kept the document because I wanted to see it. And like, I was looking at it the other day, and like, it was like match fees of €150. They wanted their own tracksuits, access to gym, high performance center. It was not crazy stuff, you know, and it made me at the time think, why does somebody need, like, it should never happen that somebody needs to make a stand like that to ask for such basic things. So you're right to ask those questions. But I think, Cliona, going back to your point about it, it's actually, the strength is when people say no, because then when suddenly it's not accepted, then the rest of society is getting behind you and saying, you're absolutely right. Like, this is not good enough. And it was amazing to see the amount of times, even Florence's tweet was retweeted so many times. It was just like somebody saying stop and the world catching up and realizing this is a bigger issue.
Yeah, and I mean, there'll always be the negative comments on Twitter, and they probably, the negative comments, and the one particular negative comment, which was screenshotted and reshared 1,000 times, was probably the one that brought the most attention to that whole saga, because his opinions on women's sport or women's rugby in particular were what, you know, highlighted everyone's anger, and it really sparked the attention. So not that any publicity is good publicity, that's not the case at all, but it was good to see the response, and it was good to see players from, and it was through no coaxing of anybody, but players from every union, you know, every national team, Scottish girls got involved, the English girls got involved, all off their own bat, because they just thought it wasn't fair. And they've obviously experienced things like that throughout their, you know, throughout their youth or throughout their playing experience. They've felt that before. They felt that misrepresentation or the lack of representation altogether. So it was nice to see the kind of the community come together in that way. But it is a shame that it had to happen at all. And I think that's the issue. And I've said before, and I do understand where, I do understand how bad it was before, and I always will acknowledge that. I do understand how much we've moved on, but I think if we keep looking back, we can never move forward. So it is my job to say, no, that's not good enough. It is my job to demand more and more, and it is my job to want more and drive for more, because if I don't do that, well, my daughter, if I have one, or my nieces, they won't have it. And then it's also my job not to say to them in a couple of years' time, when they are given out about not having enough money, if they're full-time athletes, it's also my job not to say to them, well, you're lucky you have anything at all, because I didn't. It should be, absolutely, you should get more money and keep driving for more. Why wouldn't you? Because that will be the attitude that drives our game forward from everybody, not just from those who participate.
Yeah, and look, Sue, that is the bigger picture, because the players on the pitch can do one thing. You can do something else. Fiona can do something else. I mean, this is a bigger picture here about coaching at a ground level, doing it at administration level, doing it as the players. And when all those pieces come together, you are looking at a transformation. It just might take a little bit longer than all of us would like, but we definitely all have a role to play here, don't we?
Oh, look, absolutely, absolutely. And as Fupa's goal, like, that was, you know, quite a one for sure. And, you know, I think how Clean has framed it there is so spot on. It's like, right now, what now? And what now is Canterbury, like, are sponsoring, they give it a try program, and they have a whole piece now retailing the new women's jersey. And like, it was really, like, one of the things really important to me was that we would have the national team jersey be the national team jersey, and that crest, and that's like, that's massive and so important. And now it's like really building on that and building on everything else we've spoken about before. And I think one of the things, because I know this week our focus around 20 by 20, I think one of the things that's been really massive this year in that whole movement is that a real coming together, like all of us, you know, so from broadcasting, media, the coverage of the women's game, the focus on the women's game, from the organizations that run the game. So there's a real coming together to really up to the next level and not just aspire and, you know, sometime down the road, but like we want to get on with it and we want to get on with it now. And I think it's important to bring that impatience. And at the same time, there is a reality check around what can be achieved and that some things do take a period of time. But as I said, you know, it's not a case of resting on our laurels. It's really going for it. The other piece within that, you know, because is that whole governance and leadership. You know, we want to move the thing forward from the top now, and that's the other piece that's in train. We need to make it easier for women to get involved in all areas of the game, including the decision-making side. And to be part of that whole decision-making piece across. And we see big strides there too. And that governance review is coming near the end. So when that gets rolled out, it's something else that will help us really fundamentally move the thing forward on another level again. So, you know, the old slogan, lots done, more to do, but we really are in a position where I think we've really good structures, really good foundations in place. And we want to keep that urgency going in continuing to move things to the next level.
Okay, if that's what's happening at that level, then for you, Cliona, as you're currently, you know, getting ready to finish this season's Six Nations and obviously looking ahead to World Cup qualification as well, what's the thing that you'd like to see most?
Oh, wow, on the spot. what's the thing that I'd like to see most? Probably... I mean, nobody asks for a lot, I don't think. I think we would just like a bit of equality is really what we want, so that it's not always, we're not looking for more. We don't have to ask for more. We can just arrive and do our job and not be, you know, not be worried about what's going on off the pitch or you know, what time kickoff is. Is it clashing with another international kickoff? Are Spain and Italy playing at the same time that we're playing France? Is anyone going to be watching the match on TV? You know, all those kind of things, so that we can one day soon go out and actually just be rugby players and not try and also be the bandwagon behind the sport. While we know that is our role at the minute, I think that would be the final destination for me, so that we can focus on our job and being role models for young people, as opposed to trying to fix the cracks or the problems that might be appearing as we go along.
Yeah, God, I don't think anybody could put it better than that. But try and do it, Fiona, from your point of view, what it looks like for you and what you'd like to see the most.
Yeah, I suppose, again, it's equality and, like Lena said, but an equity of access. You know, I think we're a little bit away from equality, but if we got equity, that would be a good starting point, that girls, you know, and it's there in absolutely most clubs. I think Sue mentioned that, I think it's about 156 clubs out of the 217 or 18 that have female participation. But that if a girl wants to play rugby, that she's able to play, you know, so whether that's at 6 or 7 or 8 or 28, that there is an opportunity for her to play that. And so that's the grassroots piece. And the high performance piece, I suppose, for me, I want to wish Tina and the girls the best of luck. You know, I think it's really important that they have a strong finish to the Six Nations campaign. They were doing so well before COVID. And I think that's really important, because you can't beat having the role models winning, you know. So a really strong finish for them. And that, you know, that the tournaments around the World Cup, that they continue to show that the strides that they've made, and that the results, you know, I suppose, represent all the hard work that they've put in and all the sacrifices, and that they get the rewards in terms of the results, because that automatically feeds back. Like when I ask a girl, if I ask a 16-year-old girl who's her role model, I want it to be Cliona Maloney, you know, I want it to be Senne, I want it to be people like this. I don't want it to be, you know, Johnny Sexton or Robbie Henshaw or, you know, Conor Murray. I want it to be that what I've seen, you know, I've seen these girls play, and, you know, that I want it to be them, because I think that's when we'll know that we've come around the corner, is that when the girls that I'm coaching at the moment are younger are citing the likes of Tina as the role model, as the person that they want to be when they grow up, because they're certainly great role models, and I want more of them out there to be the role models.
Yeah, well, I hope that is the case. We'll have to leave it there. But look, I thoroughly enjoyed your company today. Thanks so much for taking the time. Sue Carty, Cliona Maloney and Fiona Steed on this week's RTE Rugby podcast. And a reminder that you can get all of our 20 by 20 podcasts this week. The GAA and our soccer podcasts are out this week as well. Do tune in. Thanks for listening.